Hey everybody, welcome to the Shay Anything podcast. Doug Williams alongside John Harper, nice enough to have a guest cameo here on the podcast. Harp and I are actually spending a lot of time together this
quality
week. Harp's
time.
My buddy. We're getting in early every day of the winter meetings, and Harp's going to help us out on the podcast as well. Just because there's a lot going on this week. Everybody's in Vegas, including my regular co-host, Andy Martino, who is, however, nice enough to join us on the phone from Las Vegas. Andy, is it as quiet there at the winter meetings as it seems right now on Twitter, or is there actually a lot of stuff going on?
There's a lot of stuff going on, but I think if you're sensing a quiet back home, it's just because this hardly really hasn't started yet. I mean, as I talk to you here, it's not even noon yet on the first day of the meetings, our time here. So, I mean, I've been here since Saturday because we wanted to get settled and set up, but Brody Van Wagenen didn't get in until, I saw him last night around the casino in the evening. I think he was just in a little bit before that. So it's just not really gotten started yet.
It's the only location for winter meetings where seeing the GM at the casino wouldn't be a noteworthy concept.
Brody at the craps
normally,
table
that would
or
be
what?
A story.
Andy Brody at the craps
table?
No,
but I tell you what. No, he was nice enough to seek out me and our friend Ron Darling, who were having a drink, and we had a nice chat as Brody was on his way in, just shooting the breeze. It was a relaxed kind of thing. He was working already right, last night, but it's just meetings hasn't gone on yet. I would like to note that I, who am not a casino guy, experienced a roulette for the first time, and the adrenaline rush was scary. I wanted to keep going and lose all my money.
Yeah.
This guy next to me, I drank one beer. Well, I played roulette long enough to drink one beer. I found out that you get free drinks when you gamble. I didn't know that.
That's how they lure you in.
I didn't know that. That's how little I know.
The more money you lose, the more drinks you get.
Exactly.
Yeah. In the course of drinking one beer, this guy next to me, I promise you, and I have a witness to this, lost $4,000. Just kept putting down the hundreds. He lost $4,000 in maybe 20 minutes.
It chews you up, spits you out.
What was the hot number, Andy? Did you play a hot number?
I played my family's birthdays, and I lost everything.
You can blame them then.
So you've been active on Twitter, at least with the Real Muto thing, and I have a question from Craig Silverman on Twitter. Does it seem the Mets would rather use Nimmo in a deal for Real Muto than for Kluber? And that leads, obviously, to the bigger picture question, Andy, which is where are the Mets as it pertains right now to Real Muto and Kluber?
More on Real Muto than Kluber. Like last night, I asked the Mets person about Kluber, and it was like, yeah, we haven't really gotten going with that to the point where we could even really say like what the price would be, or you know, I don't think that's been much more than preliminary. And based on reports, not mine, but that I'm seeing, Kluber and the Dodgers seems to be gaining some momentum this morning. These things can flare up and flare down on Twitter with nothing happening. But the Mets don't seem to be in the center of the conversation for Kluber at the moment, and they still very much are for Real Muto. Although that price is really high, somebody I was talking to from one of the interested teams, not the Mets, on Real Muto made a good point last night, which was like, the Cardinals got very, very little for a great hitter in Paul – excuse me, the Diamondbacks got very little for a great hitter in Paul Goldschmidt because he has 1 year of control. So – the Marlins, if they overplay their hand and don't move Real Muto, I could be looking at getting not much if they hold him and trade him later. So they might have to back down a little bit off of the sun and the moon and the stars and everything else they appear to be asking. But yeah, the Mets, they want him.
And what were you going to say?
Do you think, because I've heard the Dodgers really like Real Muto as well, would that, if they end up getting Kluber, would that affect what they do with Real Muto, you think?
That's a good question. I mean, I can't say that I know that the Dodgers, if they're doing the Sandy Alderson one thing after another or the Brody parallel tracks, where they could try to do everything at once. I don't really know the answer to that, John. I think that other than to say that obviously if they dent their prospect depth in one trade, it would seem to make another one less likely. Plus, we've heard a lot about the Dodgers trying to limit payroll and stay under the luxury tax for the next couple of years. So you'd think that one decent-sized financial ad, based on what we've heard from the Dodgers, would be enough. I'm also obviously we're interested in how the Kluber-Bauer trade thing impacts the Yankees and their starting. There's a lot of pieces that are waiting on other pieces right now. For example, does Cashman want to reel in Jay Happ, or does he want to wait and see if Kluber can happen, or these teams that are in on Real Muto and Kluber, that's holding up the catching market. So there seems like there's all these interconnected pieces that affect all these things right now. Like none of the other catchers are signing because of Real Muto. All these things are kind of gummed up at the moment.
It seems like one of the things that's interesting and unique about the winter meetings, Andy, is all of these people get together and you can take the temperature of opposing GMs and say, you know, what sense are you getting about Noah Syndergaard's availability? Have you learned from being there yet just how available Brody Van Wagenen has made him out to be?
He is what they're saying publicly kind of matches what seems to be true, is that he's available for a high price. I sense that this Syndergaard thing started to fizzle a little bit when I heard a couple weeks ago that the Padres said no on Fernando Tatis Jr., and I think that kind of burst the bubble for the moment of the Mets being able to get something really great for Syndergaard. But they are hoping that, or at least interested to see if getting together with the GMs this week reinvigorates that Syndergaard market. And although I would more expect to see Syndergaard on the team on opening day than I would have said a month ago, the week will still be interesting and they'll still listen. And there's obviously a massive difference between how the Mets view Syndergaard and DeGrom. DeGrom is a permanent part of that roster now, and Syndergaard definitely is not necessarily. So nothing's really changed much other than probably a little bit of a loss of momentum for now on the idea that he's going anywhere.
Well, I saw where Nelson Figueroa suggested Syndergaard for Carlos Correa. It was kind of a proposed trade on Hot Stove last night.
That sounds like something that might have more have come out of the later hours of the holiday party for Nelson. But
the Astros
sure
probably aren't all that excited about doing that, I wouldn't think, but you never know.
Andy, I have no idea if you have any information regarding the Mets and the Dodgers and how much they've possibly discussed working together here, but a question from SD Ross, who says, is it possible to deal Dom Smith to the Dodgers for Puig, which the Dodgers can then use as a piece to obtain Kluber? I guess that's a two-part question. Puig is an interesting guy to talk about with the Mets, who could use another outfielder if they do trade either Nimmo or Conforto. And then Dom Smith, is he somebody the Mets want to trade, or with the value where it is right now, would they rather actually give him a shot at first base in 2019?
With Puig, I've heard some pushback on the idea that he's available just as a salary dump. I heard the Dodgers want something like player-wise, so I don't know that. I mean, that's something to keep an eye on for sure, but I don't see anything too hot there. And what was the other player you asked me about?
Dom Smith.
That's weird that we haven't heard that name much at all, because you'd think he'd be really tradable in that Brody seems to have some kind of man crush on Peter Alonso, and Dom Smith is not spoken of. But I mean, his value's down. I think it's unfortunate for Smith, because he showed some signs. I think he matured personally, by all accounts. And I think he's someone that if he were going to get a chance to play next year, has a shot to be a little bit of a breakout candidate. But trade value seems down. But I certainly think that they would listen on him. I guess it's more of a asking right now.
Yeah, but with Flores and Bruce gone, I mean, maybe he's your backup plan at first base too, right?
Yeah, and they like him to play a little outfield. Obviously, he did a little bit of that last year. And they are not interested in trying Alonso out in the outfield at all. So, yeah, maybe Smith can do that. But I would think that a guy who's just on the cusp of developing, a player and team would be best served by getting regular bats, and he's sort of done with AAA. So it's a weird fit. I mean, it is what it is. If they need him to play a more of a bench role or a versatile role, I guess you got to do it. But he's somebody who I think might be able to contribute more.
One more, Andy, and then we'll let you go, and Harp and I are going to talk on the other side. Andrew Miller, you tweeted that Mets fans should keep their eye out for Miller and the Mets.
Yep, he's a guy that, I mean, obviously they're looking at a lot of bullpen pieces, but I was told specifically that Miller's someone to watch this week. I think the Mets are hoping to, you can't force it, if depending on how the market develops league-wide, but they're really hoping to leave here with an impact reliever to pair with Edwin Diaz. Miller is somebody, after reviewing the medicals and all that, they are still very much on him, so that indicates they've got a hopeful, some hopeful signs there. But there's competition. It's kind of like the Yankees, the Phillies, the Red Sox, and the Mets are all in this pool of the same relievers, whether it be they're all these guys who are slightly like setup guys or slightly like below Kimbrel, like Joe Kelly, Familia, Miller, et cetera. But Miller is definitely a guy that the Mets are they're into right now and worth watching.
All right, Andy, thank you for joining us, and good luck with the lucky numbers, the family numbers on the roulette table, my
friend. Try somebody else's birthday tonight.
Yeah, use my birthday.
Yeah, the kid's birthday definitely did not work, so I will try something different.
All right, we'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course.
Bye.
One thing, Harp, that occurs to me, we're talking about these avenues the Mets may go down. There's the Andrew Miller and A.J. Pollock Avenue, which those are two solid players, but I'm not sure it excites your fan base. And then there's the trade Syndergaard to restock on prospects and sign JT Realmuto. Like, there's an exciting route that might require giving up a ton. And then there's the, well, you fill a hole in the outfield. Maybe you sign Martin Maldonado and you get a reliever. Which do you think is more realistic? Which would you like to see more?
Yeah, I mean, I think fans love the action. We know that.
Yeah.
I think it's become, fantasy sports has created this GM culture among fans. They want more moves, the better. But I do think it's more likely they go the other way. I kind of predicted that for in a column for SNY. That I think the Dodgers will get Realmuto if anybody does, because they have that young catcher, Ruiz, that supposedly everybody loves. But they're trying to win right now, so they might give him up for Realmuto. So in any case, I suggested the Mets go sign those free agents instead. To me, Pollock and Miller are big. They would be big time moves. You know, there's risk in both of them because they have injury history, but in Miller's case especially, I think you would gamble there now because you have Diaz at the back end as the closer, kind of a sure thing. Now I'd gamble a little more because Miller becomes a little more of a wild card. And if he's healthy, those two at the back end, that's as good as any bullpen in the big league.
Well, the question with Miller, and this may be a total mystery. I don't know off the top of my head what MLB Trade Rumors is predicting because they're very good. But what are you going to give a guy like that? Because if you're signing good Andrew Miller, you'd like to have him for as long as you can.
Yeah.
But like you said, he's a risk with injuries, so are you giving him a 3-year deal, like, or a 2-year deal?
I think that depends on how many teams are in on him. It sounds like there's still a bunch of teams that are interested. So I think it might take a 3-year deal. 3 years at the going rate for those kind of relievers has gotten into the, 15, 16, 17? I would think it'd be on the low end of that because he is in his mid-30s. But I would think you're still looking at maybe 3 years, 40 plus million, which is, it's a lot for, because mostly considering his injury history, because when he's right, he's great. But now, you get into that age and you have knee issues and he's had some shoulder and elbow over the years, you start to wonder a little bit about that, about how long you would go.
I think Met fans are happy to hear that Syndergaard, that the trade talks have cooled down a little bit. But that's one of the dominoes we've talked about, because if you're going to trade Syndergaard, that might mean that you can go get a Corey Kluber. Like, when Brody made the move for Cano, I thought he's really thinking outside the box here. And he may make some really interesting moves here. But trading Syndergaard was unpopular in the fan base. How do you think Brody should be looking at the idea of trading Syndergaard as the winter meetings commence?
The only way I think it works now, and as opposed to when we started all this talk back in July, June or July or whatever, is that if you get a big time impact offensive player in return, I don't think you're getting Carlos Correa necessarily, but when there was that talk about Chris Bryant for a little while, which I never thought was realistic, that's the kind of guy I would trade Syndergaard for. But other than that, I'm not trading him for prospects at this point because you've declared yourself all in with this Cano trade. So unless you're getting something, and I see how it could work, because if you do trade him and then you go out and even if you sign a Happ or a Keuchel, that's still it's a decent replacement depending on what you get in return for Syndergaard.
Right. And by the way, one of the great things about this podcast is it broadcasts live to our newsroom, even though it's not live to our listeners and viewers. And Dave Mandel just texted me, 3 for 27 was what MLB Trade Rumors predicted for Miller. If we're talking 3 for 27, that's maybe one more year than you'd like to give up, but that's not a ton of money.
No, it's not bad. I mean, that's what he got, I think. Oh, no, I think he got four at 9 year, $9 million a year with the Yankees original deal. I don't know. I think it would depend on the interest, but I think if he's healthy, he could maybe make it command a little more. I guess the age is going to knock that down, but I would take that chance from the Mets because, look, you're going for it, and if he's right,
he's so man, good.
That's such a great back end with the two of them.
I saved two Twitter questions for you specifically. The first one, because we're coming off your juicy SNY.TV column about 10 bold predictions, which, as I'm sure you've already learned, Twitter doesn't look at bold predictions as bold predictions. They look at them like you're stating them as facts. So I'm sure you've seen some overreactions already. But Andrew asks, what's the first move for the Mets this week? Do you think bullpen is the first to go here with them?
I do, just because I'll go back to last year. I think there's so much importance placed on relievers now, and there's so many of them out there. I think the Mets in particular, well, obviously different GM, but they waited around and looked for a bargain last year with Swarzak. You would think
did not turn out to be a bargain.
You would think with the guys now, I would think they'd be aggressive. Go get the guy you want, and if you can't get one guy, there's another guy right there. So I think. Yeah, I think bullpen would be first.
And this last question is kind of random, but I guess it's not at the same time because we keep talking about Brody. We are not just watching this winter meetings interested because it's always fascinating trades, free agents, et cetera. We're watching because we're watching Brody Van Wagenen navigate his first winter meetings as a GM. And at Mets Critic on Twitter asks, does Brody Van Wagenen's past as an agent make him overvalue the older players that he is familiar with? And I know that's something we've talked about with Robbie Cano. If I put myself in Brody's shoes, I have a hard time not doing that. Because if you really believe in a guy and you repped him for 10 years, how are you supposed to just totally disassociate yourself with those feelings?
Yeah, that is kind of the tricky part, though. If you're going to become a GM, is you have to learn to take more of a less impassioned view maybe of a guy that you believe strongly in. But that's how, I mean, that scouts are the same way. They kind of fall in love with their guys that they've seen over a bunch of times and want to draft. So it's bound to happen. And if you get to know a guy personally and you feel like he's really strong, character, integrity, and all that, and mentally tough enough to deal with New York, everything else, then you probably feel like you have an advantage. Hey, I know this guy can do it for us. And I think that's what he leaned on with Cano. Maybe at the expense of overlooking his age a little bit. With Realmuto, you would think everything's right. I mean, the timing is perfect. If he really believes in this guy to go get him, it's just a matter of the price you got to pay.
I've always thought that maybe the best quality that GMs can have is not being attached to the moves you've made.
Right.
So I can imagine if I were a GM and I signed somebody like Robbie Cano to the contract that he got, I would so badly want him to produce well throughout it so that I didn't end up looking stupid for it.
Sure, that happens.
And when you have to give up and sell it off and admit your mistake, that must be very difficult on the ego because that's what these guys are made of. Every time they sign somebody to a contract, they know this is my reputation on the line.
That's right. Decisions follow them around. And that's where, the good GMs can kind of write off the bad ones and say, look, it happened to everybody, and move on, and not stick too long with a losing hand, so to speak. You got to be able to make those adjustments. But on some level, it's personal for all these GMs. When the Yankees traded for Gleyber Torres, he was the guy they were in love with as an amateur in the international market, and the Cubs beat him out for him, and they always wanted the guy when they had a chance to get him. So that stuff is always out there. GMs never forget the guy that they wanted and got away.
How often have you reported on trades where the GM who got the player said, we wanted to draft this guy, that other team took him ahead of us.
That's true.
We know it hasn't panned out for him there, but we think it's going to pan out for us here.
Sandy Alderson always wanted to draft Baez with the Cubs, his first draft.
Yep.
Couldn't get him with the ninth pick because they were drafting at 13th. So then they were interested in trading for him, maybe Syndergaard for Baez. The Cubs didn't want to do it. So, the big fish is always out there for the GM.
Well, we're trying to keep these short, Harp, as to not oversaturate our listeners this week. But we do plan on everybody doing a shorter episode every day. Hopefully, Harp will come on some of the rest of these as we move throughout the week, but we're lucky to have him today. and we'll continue to spend lots of hours together commuting in early.
That's
with
it. Fighting the commuter wars.
Yep. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. Please subscribe, rate, and review the Shannoning Podcast if you wouldn't mind. We'll talk to you tomorrow.